The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to A Sharp Outlook, Best Practices for Success with host Angela Sharp. Today's program features expert guests, industry insights, and the experience of your host, all coming together to help you take control of your company and move your business to the next level. Now, here's your host, Angela Sharp.
Hello, and thank you for joining us for A Sharp Outlook. We have a wonderful show for you today. Are you a small business owned and controlled at least 51% by U.S. citizens, or a community development corporation, an agricultural cooperative, or a tribe, and your principal office is located within a historically underutilized business zone? This information is directly impacting you. What is a hub zone? We're going to find out about a hub zone and how it can help you in these underutilized business zones. The program encourages economic development in historically underutilized zones, and we're going to talk about it today. Some of the things that you can expect if you become a Hub Zone certified company is competitive and sole sourcing contracts, 10% price evaluation preference in full and open contract competitions, as well as subcontracting opportunities. And the federal government is awarding 3% of all dollars for federal prime contracts to HubZone certified small business concerns. So this is something that I'm sure that you really want to know about if you happen to be in one of those zones. And our guest today is going to be able to explain all the information you need to know to become certified and to participate in this valuable program. Today we have Mariana Pardo, and she's the director of the HubZone program at the United States Small Business Administration. And as the director, Ms. Pardo is responsible for issuing final determinations on firms applying for HubZone certification, the continuing monitoring of certified HubZone small businesses, and adjudicating protests of eligibility regarding HubZone contracts. In December 1998, Ms. Pardo joined the federal workforce as Business Opportunity Specialist in the SBA's Small Disadvantaged Business Certification Processing Unit. In July 2006, she became Director of the 8A Business Development Certification and Continuing Eligibility. On May of 2008, she became Director of HubZone Program. Under her leadership, the HubZone team developed and implemented new business processes to reduce fraud, waste, and abuse. Ms. Pardo was born in Uruguay, South America, and moved to the U.S. in 1973. She lives in Fort Washington, Maryland, and holds a master's in technology management. Good morning.
Good morning, Angela.
Welcome to our show. We're really excited to hear all of the valuable information and opportunities that are available.
Thank you. Thank you. My pleasure. My pleasure to be here.
And so tell us about your role at the Small Business Administration.
Certainly. Yes, we have a very small team here. There's just about 20 of us, and we carry a heavy load. Our primary role here is to review initial applications from firms that are applying for HubZone certification. So we need to review their compliance, make sure that they're eligible. And also we need to monitor their continuing compliance because this program does not provide for the companies to fall in and out of compliance while they're certified. And so we need to monitor their compliance. And also we process protests. And these protests are in connection with contracts. So, for example, if a HubZone firm is going to be receiving an award of a HubZone contract, but one of their competitors that also bid on that work suspects that the firm may not be in compliance, they can protest that the status of that company, and we receive those protests here, and we need to look into the allegations and obtain evidence and either find the protested firm in compliance or not. So that's basically, in a nutshell, what we do here. And my role is to basically try to find better ways for the team to do their work so that we can streamline operations as much as possible so people don't have to wait too long, you know, as they're applying. And also, a part of my time is really devoted to this type of efforts, you know, that you're helping me perform, educating the firms, because the better educated the business are, they're placed in a much stronger position, not only to obtain the certification, but most important, to maintain it and reap the benefits of it, which is eventually, obviously, obtaining contracts, you know.
Right. So tell us, what is the HubZone program?
Sure. The HubZone program began in the late 90s, and it was a response of the dire economic situations in parts of the country that had never really seen success. And this has been going on for certain parts of our country for generations. So these are not, the HubZone areas are not areas that are maybe, I would say, for a lack of a better term, temporarily depressed. For example, we had a recession, you know, a few years ago, and some areas went down or went up in unemployment, median household income went down. But these HubZone areas are areas that have been very, very poor for generations. So the areas that qualify for HubZone are areas, for example, that have at least they need to meet certain criteria, and SBA does not determine the HubZones. We use external data. Mm-hmm. So, for example, they have to the areas have at least a 25% poverty rate. So they're very, very poor, and usually infrastructure to foster industry or business development is severely lacking. And so this program works very, very well with economic development agencies around the country. So there's a few economic development agencies around the country that are beginning to see this program as another tool for helping attract industry into their economically distressed areas. So the program basically was designed for economic development, and the expectation has always been for the firms to invest in these areas. So we usually are trying to find firms that are slightly more mature than just maybe a sole proprietorship, because, you know, I was a business owner myself, and when you're just by yourself sometimes operating your business out of your kitchen counter, is challenging, you know, challenging to obtain capital, et cetera. But once you become a little bit more mature and you have perhaps, you kind of cross that threshold of maybe a dozen employees, you know, 12, 13, 50 employees, then you can start moving the needle a little bit more, you know, in terms of resources. Mm-hmm. So this program is really, really well positioned for firms that have been already successful in the federal contracting arena. Perhaps they're obtaining contracts in full and open competition. And they're trying to, what I see is firms that are trying to reduce their, increase their competitiveness by reducing their competition.
Right.
And also, many of them, I would say the majority, are trying to find a way of giving back to their communities that have given them so much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I know that there's been a high interest about the HubZone in tribal communities.
Yes.
And I know they do suffer with having infrastructure.
Yes.
They're generally very isolated.
Yeah.
They don't have, you know, some of the high-speed internet technology,
sure. Yeah.
Different things like that. Is this a program that would be advantageous to them?
Definitely. You know, what I would suggest is, because obviously nothing in life is dependent upon one tool that you're using.
Mm-hmm.
So what I would recommend to your listeners is if there is someone that works with a tribal government, perhaps in the economic development arena, to please reach out to us. because we can certainly figure out what type of industry they are trying to foster, you know, because they need to take a look at, okay, what is the government buying and what can we sell, you know, from here. And then they need to take a look at the requirements of the program because, for example, as a tribally owned concern, they have a certain, for example, if the companies to apply and maintain certification, they have to meet some basic criteria. Mm-hmm. And they have to have a principal office, like you mentioned earlier, that is in a HAVSM. Mm-hmm. Now, the principal office is defined as the place where my employees work from, mm-hmm. Except if I have a service company. So if I have a janitorial firm, for example, obviously most of my employees are going to be working at my client's site, mm-hmm. but then I need to have my overhead folks, my administrative folks working out of that principal office. And the reason for that is obvious that we want to spur economic development around that principal office. So right. you have this building that perhaps was neglected, abandoned maybe, and there I go, move in with maybe 5 or 7 employees, and my employees are going to be buying perhaps a sandwich once a week or twice a week across the street, that type of thing. And so it spurs that economic development around. But and the other thing on this program is that besides having that requirement of that office being in a HAVSM and having employees that are working from there, then also the firms must employ people that reside in these HAVSMs. Right. And they have a minimum. They have to employ at least 35% of their employees must reside in HAVSMs, not necessarily where the principal office is, because I encourage your listeners to go to our map and they're going to see that there are pockets of HAVSMs all over the country. Mm-hmm. So sometimes there may be areas that are not HAVSMs, but so long as you have employees in HAVSMs, that would be fine. Mm-hmm. And they have to be small and they have to be, like you mentioned, all in control, at least 51% by a U.S. citizen. But for tribally owned concerns, you know, that requirement of the principal office and the employee requirement, mm-hmm. they actually have a choice. And it all depends on really what they envision as being able to do with the certification. So, for example, if I'm a tribal government and I decide to open a company that I'm going to be seeking HAVSM certification, I need to start thinking besides my business model, I'm going to start thinking as to, okay, am I going to choose only for tribal government owned businesses, they have this opportunity to choose upon applying. They can choose that they're going to keep a principal office in a HAVSM and ensure that they're going to have 35% of the employees residing in HAVSMs, just like everybody else. Or they can choose that they will have at least 35% of the employees engaged in working on the HAVSM contract that they will receive once they get certified. And that those people, at least 35 of those people, must reside within an Indian reservation. Right. You know? And so that provides that employment to the folks that are living in the reservation. Now, obviously that may work for some, may not work for others. It all depends on that business model. But that is a flexibility that is provided to the tribally owned concerns mm-hmm. that really is a very nice flexibility.
Right. Mm-hmm. And and not only that, it also gives an opportunity for them to actually maybe partner with someone as right. long as they're hiring, you know, in the tribal community
exactly.
and actually bring jobs mm-hmm. to the area or bring revenue to the
yeah.
area, you
yeah.
know, working in maybe a neighboring, you know, city or something like
Definitely.
That.
Definitely. You know, I have to tell you a story about that. I'm glad that you mentioned it because you remind me of there was a company that their headquarters was located in a very affluent area in Northern Virginia. Mm-hmm. Now, the headquarters for HAVSM, so that your listeners understand the nuances of this program, the headquarters does not have to be in a HAVSM.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that principal office,
mm-hmm.
you know? And that principal office is where the greatest number of the employees work. So if you have a headquarters, like this firm had a headquarters in an affluent area, not a HAVSM in Northern Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
And their business model, they wanted to open a call center.
Mm-hmm.
And what they do was they looked in the map, they educated themselves about the HAVSM areas. So HAVSM areas are varied. Like I mentioned, very generally, these are very poor areas. Mm-hmm. But we have 4 different types of HAVSMs, more or less. We have HAVSMs that we call non-metropolitan counties. They could be qualified, the entire county. We can have pockets of census tracts that can be qualified. Now, Indian reservations are hub zones automatically,
right,
and they never expire. Mm-hmm. Whereas the others that I just mentioned, the other two, if the data shows that they don't meet that criteria, you know, that, for example, poverty rate or unemployment, they lose the designation of hub zone. We do need to keep them grandfathered in for 3 more years, but eventually they go away. And that's what we want, obviously. We want these areas. We want to reduce the number of poor areas of the country, and we being just an extra tool. But the Indian reservations, Indian country, is deemed to be a hub zone forever. It never expires. So this firm in Northern Virginia, the business model that they developed was they wanted to operate a call center. They wanted to market their services to the Health and Human Services, you know, federal agency. Mm-hmm. And what they did is they opened their office in an Indian reservation.
Right.
They negotiated. I don't know the particulars. Probably someone very savvy within the tribal government officials of the Economic Development Agency probably also was marketing their site. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they opened there, and that's where they provide employment, and the company's obtaining contracts. So it's wonderful to see a tribal government can actually, like you just said, Angela, look at how do we want to grow? What is it that we need? Mm-hmm. And how can we market what we have and have some being another tool, you know?
Right. This is just an absolutely wonderful idea. I mean, my mind is turning right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking about all the different upcoming events and things where there could be, you know, networking is still, you know, going on. I know that NeighborWorks is having a training coming up. A colleague of mine is actually doing a training with NeighborWorks in Kansas City, Missouri, talking about how to partner with tribes and tribal companies and tribal organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And so this could be the beginning of a dialogue where you're actually talking about, okay, we have this opportunity to maybe partner together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have maybe the facilities, you have
money,
you have all these different things, and you can bring industry to where we are.
Mm-hmm.
Because I had a training last week talking about the fact that, you know, a lot of some tribal members and other people in urban areas don't know how to use a checkbook. They're lacking in financial literacy.
Right.
But, you know, when you're bringing dollars in and they're staying in the community, now it's growing. But when the dollars are leaking, your economy is leaking.
Mm-hmm.
You can't ever grow until you plug the leak. You know, anyone wanting to know about the upcoming training that's going to be held by NeighborWorks, you can go to NeighborWorks' website and look at it. I believe it's December 9th, 10th, and 11th. But I, you know, encourage, you know, businesses to go to that webinar, I mean, go to that website to find out more information about it. You know, let's start partnering and bring in business. We're getting ready to go to a break, but we're going to come back and find out even more about this because this is an opportunity that can change agricultural areas, you know, tribal areas, very underdeveloped. And there's a lot of underdeveloped areas right here in the United States.
Yes.
And so we want to learn more about how we can tap into this and actually benefit.
Definitely.
So we're going to break right now.
Business community's first choice in Internet Talk Radio, Voice America Business Network.
Do you want to know what's really going on these days? Well, Capital Thinking takes you inside the worlds of policy, politics, law, and business. What happens in Washington, on Wall Street, and in our nation's legal system impacts your business every day. We're taking you on a behind-the-scenes tour of all of it. Each week, we bring you unfiltered conversation with a variety of influential policymakers, lawyers, and business leaders. I'm Kevin O'Neill, and I'm your host as Capital Thinking tours the halls of power. Join me for Capital Thinking on the Voice America Business Network each Thursday at noon Eastern and 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
The way we do banking today continues to evolve. No longer is it just brick and mortar locations or traditional bankers' hours. Today, banking is 24/7. It's in the home, It's on the go. It's digital. Tune in to Breaking Banks with Brett King for a look at how traditional banking as we know it has changed due to a loss of trust, changing economic conditions and consumer behavior, government involvement, and, of course, technology. What does it all mean? Listen every Thursday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific, on the Voice America Business Channel. We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
You are listening to A Sharp Outlook. To reach Angela Sharp or today's guest, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send email to asharpe outlook@gmail.com or tweet the program at asharpcons. Now, back to the program.
Just before the break, we were learning a lot of information about the HubZone program. And just for, you know, the listening audience enrichment, I'd like you to discuss how this program is different than the 8A Business Development Program.
Yeah, no, excellent question. It has some overlaps in the sense that, for example, the ownership and control that you mentioned earlier, both programs need to be owned and controlled at least 51% by U.S. citizens. When we're dealing with U.S. citizens, obviously, the tribally owned concerns that we were dealing with, both programs are very similar in terms of the ownership requirement. Size requirements are the same because, obviously, they need to be small. But that's when it breaks off. The 8A is a business development program. So it's a program that is actually looks at the qualification and the eligibility of the owner. So the certification really touches the owner. For example, I am Hispanic from South America. So under the 8A rules, I'm considered to be socially and economically disadvantaged. I'm presumed to be socially and economically disadvantaged unless I overcame it, you know, became a millionaire all of a sudden or something like that.
Right.
So if I apply for the 8A, they look at my assets, my revenues, you know, they're looking at me. And then if I qualify for the certification, then I enter into this business development program, and it's a 9-year development program. Mm-hmm. After that, that's it. I cannot apply for another certification for the 8A. The expectation is that they're going to take me as a diamond in the rough, a very tiny company, and help me grow to my fullest potential.
Right.
And I can terminate before the 9 years for whatever reason, if I feel that, you know, I no longer need the program or I'm not in compliance, or but I need to do something active myself to terminate, you know.
Right.
Now, looking at the HubZone program is very different. Basically, even though the program in HubZone needs that citizenship ownership, that's all we look at. We look at, okay, give me birth certificate of the majority owner. Okay, U.S. citizen, check, that's it. Because we don't care if that owner has enormous assets. As a matter of fact, I always tease around my team, and I always say, gosh, I would love to have more millionaires in our program, because so long as that firm, that well-to-do owner, so long as the firm is small, they're going to qualify. We don't look at the assets of the owner because, again, this is an economic development program. And the reason why I would love to have more affluent individuals is because those are the people that have better access to capital, you know, to help these communities. So then what happened is the other aspect that 8A has that we have that 8A doesn't have is that requirement of employees that reside in a HubZone. And so imagine if we have some overlap. We have about maybe out of the 5,000 firms that we have in the portfolio right now, about 25% to 30 are also 8A certified. But they have to be very careful. The firms that are familiar with the 8A program or any other self-certification like being a woman-owned or service-disabled vet or even a small business, those are certifications, self-certifications also that you need to do something active to be challenged and lose it. In HubZone, if you don't plan well, you can lose the certification for issues that there could be out of your control. Now, you can mitigate the risk. And let me explain. So, for example, in my example of the call center that I was showing you before,
right.
This company, what they were trying to do was to reduce the risk of an area no longer being designated as a hot zone.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were looking at Indian reservations and Indian country as a vehicle to stabilize that uncertainty.
Right.
Now, that obviously doesn't work for all the firms, but mm-hmm. these practices that I wanted to share with your listeners is what I see is firms that remain in the program very successfully are those that basically plan ahead. They develop a strategy. So, for example, they obtain the certification and they have a presence in a hub zone. They have, you know, they usually keep that 35% residency requirement of the employees much higher to have some wiggle room.
Right.
So they usually have it at around 60% so that if one employee leaves the company or moves to an area that is not a hub zone, at least they have that cushion.
Mm-hmm.
But they also, what they do as they start growing,
mm-hmm.
they start looking at other offices
mm-hmm.
that they could open to service, you know, present work that they have
right.
and expand. But they look at locating these offices in other hub zones.
Mm-hmm.
And they try to stay away from areas that have been grandfathered in, or what I said earlier, that areas that are losing designation,
mm-hmm.
they need to stay in for 3 years just to provide, you know, a little bit of winning out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so these companies, when they're looking at locations, they're trying to go for the areas that are purely hub zone, that they have not lost it and now they are kind of in the grandfathered area because eventually they're going to lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's strategies, obviously, that they need to do. And so it demands, one item for these companies is that it demands a slight little, another type of a direct cost, a little sliver of that overhead
mm-hmm.
is going to be dedicated to managing this components.
Right.
So usually what I see is a company, depending on the size of the company, but it may be, if it is a small company, maybe under 6 employees, maybe it might be the owner or one of the daughters of the owner or the wife or something, that on weekends they take a look and say, okay, who? It seems that we're getting another contract. We need to hire people. We need to hire from the hub zone. We're constantly marketing for employees in these areas. We need to train.
Mm-hmm.
Because many of these employees that reside in this very, very economically distressed areas have not had the opportunities
right.
of education
right.
and employment.
Mm-hmm.
And so they need to spend resources or leverage, like you were saying before
mm-hmm.
the break,
right.
leverage local resources to train these employees for what they're doing. So as you see, it's a lot of other work that they need to do. Another than the 8A is not expected to do. Another aspect that is different is that when a firm it decertifies in hub zone. Let's say that a firm, one of the employees left and they're not meeting the 35%. Usually firms, when they see that, they voluntarily decertify from the program.
Mm-hmm.
And they can come back.
Okay.
So they need to wait 90 days from the time that they decertify to reapply. But it's a whole new reapplication. So usually we encourage firms to really do the hard work before applying to figure out what is the strategy that you're going to do to lessen the likelihood of having to be decertified so that you don't have to go in and out, because that's costly too. So as you see, they're very different type of requirements and work that the owners have to do in these two different certifications.
Now, the certification process, I know that there's a website. Can you let our listeners know about your website?
Yes,
and
definitely.
The certification process, application?
Sure,
mm-hmm.
sure, yes. The first thing that, if I was a company looking at this, the first thing that I would do, I would go to the SBA.gov website.
Mm-hmm.
If I have not been active in the federal contracting arena, and I need to see, because remember, if that is not the market that you're going after, this certification is not going to help the firm.
Right.
So they have to sort of look at, okay, what is it that I'm going to be selling, or what is it I'm selling, and instead of marketing the federal contract. So by going to the SBA website, really, there is a wealth of information, particularly the Learning Center there has a ton of stuff that will get me going, you know, kind of like, okay, understanding the landscape here.
Mm-hmm.
But if I am really interested in zeroing with hub zone, the website, the SBA website, has a search engine right on the upper right hand. And then if they write there hub zone, that's going to bring them into our website. It's going to be one of the first findings right there. And the moment that they click in the HubZone, the one thing that I would do as someone looking into this, I would first read the frequently asked questions. You know, there is a little mini video there. I would look at it just to get, you know, whet my appetite a little bit. But mm-hmm. then I would go to the frequently asked questions, and they're divided by certification. And so basically this is an online certification. So the companies, once they do, I encourage them really, it really pays off to spend as much time. Sometimes companies spend a year preparing. Mm-hmm. So spend time looking at the qualifications, looking at what you're going to be doing, how you're going to get these employees, how you're going to refurbish, you know, this place. Sometimes it may take 4 months, it may take 6 months sometimes to obtain the certification. So imagine you have to employ people that are not fully productive in your firm. Mm-hmm. But you have to employ them because they have some. Mm-hmm. How are you going to meet payroll while you're waiting, mm-hmm. you know? And then you're going to have to be bidding on contracts, and that will take a little bit longer, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So all that planning needs to take place before they apply. But it's an online application, and the companies that are most successful in obtaining the certification, which is about 40% of the companies, of the firms applying, about 40-42% are approved. The rest are either withdrawn because they're not prepared. You know, we ask for evidence. When they submit the application, basically they're telling us where they're located. They're telling us how many employees reside in a hub zone, you know, all that. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to be asking for evidence of that. So mm-hmm. we ask for evidence, okay, give us the names, photo IDs of your employees, because we need to check they need to give us copies of the maps. Mm-hmm. And all that they're doing upon applying is the same type of exercise that they're going to have to do throughout their life in the HubZone program.
Right.
Because, for example, once I get approved, my work doesn't stop there. Because, for example, when I go and I bid on a HubZone contract,
right.
I am certifying to the federal government that I'm in compliance with the HubZone program. In order for me to certify that, I need to make sure that I meet 35% that I meet the principal office. And I need to basically do my own analysis. So we spend a lot of resources here in this program educating, mm-hmm. you know, the firms. So one of the things that I would encourage your listeners to do if they're trying to figure out, okay, is this for me, is obviously look at our website. But we also have office hours that we call office hours. It's sort of virtual office hours.
Right, right.
We have a toll-free number. It's listed in our page, in our web page. And they is Tuesdays and Thursdays, 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. And it's a toll-free number. And it's, you know, basically we discuss different items. People ask questions. We don't go too much in depth with particular cases, mm-hmm. but we discuss what it means to have a virtual office. You know,
right.
Does a virtual office qualify as a principal office? Well, I don't know, sometimes, yeah. So all those things, they need to educate themselves.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, as I was mentioning before, partnering. There's so many other ways of partnering.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there's training, I know
yes.
the Office, Small Business Administration even has particular types of training programs that
yeah.
they've worked with, you know, a private industry to come in and train people,
yeah.
veterans and mm-hmm. different things like that. And so it's a matter of, you know, going in and tapping all the opportunities
definitely.
That are there. And it
definitely.
Can work if you hit all the opportunities
mm-hmm.
and look to see, okay, I don't have trained people. What other sources can get
yes.
me trained people in my particular hub zone? You
yes.
know, there's just so much.
Let me share mm-hmm. another lesson learned, because that training of employees, like you're saying, Angela, is a very expensive, endeavor for a business. It can be very expensive. So by leveraging existing resources, you can lessen the cost.
Right.
And for
right.
example, there are a couple of firms, one is in, a couple that I heard of, they probably, there are even more, but I heard of one in Maine and one in Virginia, that they partner with local educational institutions, mm-hmm. high schools in particular, mm-hmm. a high school that is located in Ahuntsic. And what they provide is they provide internship opportunities for the senior students, you know, mm-hmm. and in areas that perhaps these students, because they come from impoverished backgrounds.
Right.
And many of these students, these internships provide an opportunity for them to stay in school, mm-hmm. an outlook into an area that perhaps they never considered.
Mm-hmm.
And then that changes lives. You know, some of the students eventually get employed by the company.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them decide, you know, I'm not going to be, you know, with you, but this has opened my eyes and I'm going to enroll in preparatory college's classes.
Right.
And so there's a lot of things. And we in Hubzone, and this is actually in the frequently asked questions, an employee under the definitions of Hubzone is an individual that works at least 40 hours a month. 40 mm-hmm. hours a month.
Yeah.
So that opens up a lot of flexibility for the firm.
Mm-hmm.
They can actually hire somebody on a part-time basis
mm-hmm.
and train them and then provide additional hours as they receive more work and that employee becomes more skilled. Or if they're employing a student that resides also in a household, the student goes to high school during the day, comes to work, you know, part-time, mm-hmm. several times during the week, they can count that student. So long as that student is being paid, they can count that student, if that student is being paid, working at least 40 hours a month, resides in a household, mm-hmm. that student counts towards their 35%, you know, requirement of Hubzone employees. So there are a lot of things partnering with local education entities or even the unemployment offices that have
that's what I was getting ready to say.
Uh-huh.
I know the unemployment office,
sure.
the workforce, you know, mm-hmm. agencies, they are doing retraining programs.
Yes.
And in some ways, you know, you bring that person on, like you said, as an intern,
uh-huh.
and they, you know, can pay 50% or even more
uh-huh.
of that person's salary
uh-huh.
So that they're getting trained. There's economic development happening. There's people who are learning jobs. And you're pulling all.
Yeah.
So tapping all
yeah.
of the resources. And that comes from them actually putting together a plan, a Hubzone
exactly.
business plan.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. You
of
said
how
it.
This is all going to work and who are all of your resources
right.
that you can tap into
right.
to make this affordable,
right.
to make it successful. Because
mm-hmm.
The more mm-hmm. hands you have on deck, the
right.
more successful. Because this is not a small, you know, project. This
no.
is a big, you're talking about changing, you know, the total environment. You're,
right.
You're talking about the landscape, the economics,
yes.
the everything. You're bringing
yes.
jobs. You're
mm-hmm.
you're training your people.
Mm-hmm.
So this
mm-hmm.
is a major, major project,
yes.
a major undertaking.
Yeah.
And like
definitely.
You said, in some areas, you never, you know, leave that as a Hubzone. So
mm-hmm.
you have major opportunity for years and years and generations
mm-hmm.
to go in and totally change the landscape
yes,
of
definitely.
Your particular community
definitely.
And make it, you know, very economically strong and,
mm-hmm.
you know, lift your people up from poverty.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this
mm-hmm.
is a huge project.
Mm-hmm.
I hope my audience is really listening carefully and we'll go out to that website and actually start mm-hmm. putting plans together, you know, finding people. I will put some resources out on my website
excellent.
Of people that you can contact
yes.
that can assist you in helping you put together
mm-hmm.
your plan
mm-hmm.
so that you can actually succeed at that. Because I believe
yes.
in networking.
Oh,
I
indeed.
Know. Because we can't ever, none of
no.
us can ever know everything.
Exactly.
And so we really, really need to
mm-hmm.
network. We need to share information.
Mm-hmm.
We need to bring ideas. We need to bring opportunities. Because I've thought about this myself,
mm-hmm.
and I'm not against, you know, other countries learning,
mm-hmm.
but we have our
oh.
own Hubzone areas where we need
oh,
to
God.
Have call centers here. We
yes.
need to have, you know, small product,
yes.
you know, manufacturing
here. Indeed.
And we have the land. We have
mm-hmm.
the people. I mean,
yes.
so some of this we need to rethink of what we're doing.
Definitely.
And I think if we would bring the ideas to companies,
mm-hmm.
they would be willing to listen because
definitely.
You got to understand that there is a major cost to offshore.
Of course.
So
of course.
If you have the same opportunities
mm-hmm.
here,
mm-hmm.
you know, let's grab it. It's just networking. It's going
mm-hmm.
in, knocking on those doors, and maybe even being a little forceful.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, we can do the same job
yeah.
for less money than what you're having to pay because you have to keep, you know, shipping this out, then shipping it back, and we can do it right here.
Definitely.
Putting together those plans, putting together those comparisons, not making an assumption that you have to do business with me,
mm-hmm.
but
mm-hmm.
coming up with a viable proposal that says, I can be competitive.
Yes.
That's what they have to keep in mind.
Exactly.
I can be competitive. Bring your investment to my area
yes.
because you'll make money in
uh-huh.
my area.
Uh-huh.
So that's really what this is all about.
Yeah.
We're getting ready to go to break again, but
sure.
We will come back and discuss this even further.
Great. Thank you.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
Are you looking for innovative ideas on how to achieve your financial dreams? Tune in to Empirical Investing Radio every Thursday afternoon at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel. Join certified financial planners Ken Smith and Ethan Broga to learn how you can obtain financial success. You'll be entertained while you discover techniques to alleviate your financial concerns. Empirical Investing Radio, every Thursday at 2 Pacific, 5 Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Today's business marketplace is becoming increasingly global thanks to technologies that didn't even exist a few short years ago. Your business might be a startup or you might be one of the global 500. Either way, you're probably looking at customers and competitors in faraway regions. Listen for Global Reach with host Tay Revez as she brings together experts, ideas, and listeners to help you anywhere in the world. Global Reach is broadcast every Thursday at 2 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Listening to A Sharp Outlook. To reach Angela Sharp or today's guest, please call into the program at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. You may also send email to asharpeoutlook@gmail.com or tweet the program at asharpcons. Now, back to the program.
All right, we're back, and just before the break, we were talking about working with the unemployment or the workforce services, and so I know probably they should contact your department
yes.
about this to get more information. Explain that.
Yes, what I would love to get more emails or calls from companies when they're looking into leveraging these local resources, because we're not getting enough of those. And as I said earlier, obviously the firms that better utilize these resources are the ones that are going to be able to lower their overhead.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, one of the things that we will need to make sure that we check internally here with our attorneys is, for example, if a company, the regulations say that the company must have employees. And the employees that count towards the Have Some program are those that work at least 40 hours a month, and they get paid. Owners, by the way, count whether they get paid or not. So long as they work those 40 hours a month, owners usually work a lot more than 40 hours a month, but nonetheless. So the way that they're proving that these are employees is showing that they're paying their salaries. Sometimes, in depending on what is happening in different parts of the country, the local workforce development agencies, they may be reimbursing the company mm-hmm. a partial amount of that payroll. If the companies are looking into engaging that type of service and that leveraging that type of resource, let me know. They can send an email to mariana.pardo@sba.gov, or they can actually, we have the help desk email in our website. They can send an email, and we will research it here just to make sure that that will meet the qualifications. Mm-hmm. We don't want a company, obviously, to go one path and then not being able to get certified.
Right, perhaps, absolutely.
If that does not meet the qualifications, perhaps what we can do is actually reach out and have a conference call between the company, the workforce development agency, and us, and see, okay, how can we make this work? Because there's always a way of making things work, you know? And so to please reach out to us if they want to leverage something like that, that would be extremely productive for them and for us, too, because it would be, if we can make it work, it would be another best practice, right?
Right, absolutely. Mm-hmm. One of the other things I was just thinking while you were talking is companies that would actually be partnering with someone in a hub zone area, they could possibly, and I'm thinking because it used to be, especially underutilized areas, there used to be tax credits. I don't know, they might have changed, but there used to be tax credits.
Yeah.
So this is a benefit to that organization to partner, you know. So there's a lot of different benefits for an organization to partner with, communities that are in a hub zone.
Definitely.
Because they're going to be able to lower their costs. They're going to get tax credits. So it's attractive to them. So you have to, you know, include this in this proposal. Oh, you have me excited. I feel like writing
a proposal now.
I love it.
Well, and the other thing is, as they are approaching, you know, we started talking about the tribally owned concerns. As, as some members of the government, of the tribal government, are looking into this, by all means, reach out to us. We're more than happy to conduct a conference call, a mini webinar, whatever that would help the council look at this and learn a little bit more. Is money well spent for us to really be educating and preparing this? If it takes them a year to develop, that's okay, so long as they're in a strong foothold. Because remember, this certification does not expire. Ever. I mean, they have to recertify, we audit them, but if they're always in compliance, we have firms that have been in compliance and certified for 10 years. Imagine the benefits that they can provide to the community by an uninterrupted, you know, certification.
Right.
So,
Yeah, and this is something that, you know, especially tribal organizations or tribal communities, you know, they already have their audits, you know, because they're receiving grants, they're receiving, you know, 638 funding and things like that. So they understand that there are compliance, you know, issues that they need to, you know, make sure that they're taken care of.
Yeah.
You know, they're aware of it. They do this regularly.
Yeah.
So I think they're in good position because that's just part of, you know, their existence.
Exactly.
So for this is just another vehicle to even push them even further, you know, in their road to self-determination. I'm excited about this. This is just one more tool. When I had Daryl Harrison on discussing the 8A program, he mentioned hub zones. Like, oh, I need to research that more. And when I looked at it, it's like, I must have someone on the program to bring this wonderful information out to my listeners and them pass it on to other listeners, because this is an opportunity, even in agricultural areas. I live in South Dakota, and, you know, there are a lot of rural areas here that are pretty depressed. So they could possibly participate in this program. So I just think this is something that everyone that is in a distressed area should really...
Definitely,
truly look into it and seriously look to participate in this program. Take advantage of it. It is a way of, like I said, changing the world as it is right now.
Definitely. So, yeah, it's the one thing that I wanted to mention is that there is a requirement by the federal agencies. The federal agencies are required to meet a 3% contracting goal. Of all federal contracts, must go to Hubzone certified firms. So that is something that is quite impressive. We have never met that 3% goal. I think it was in 2011. We were way below there. I don't have the 2012 fresh in my mind, but in 2011, that amounted to $9.6 billion, and it wasn't even the 3%. I think in 2012, it was around $8 billion, and again, it was not even the 3%. So by having, remember I mentioned that we have 5,000 firms in the portfolio, and they can find those firms. They can actually take a look. It's in the frequently asked questions. They can find the list, mm-hmm. and they can look at, okay, what are these firms? You know, who are my potential competitors? Mm-hmm. And they're going to find that they have a lot less competition, you know, right. because they're fewer. So the contracting officers, for example, and we're also trying to educate the contracting officers about this program because there are some misconceptions. Mm-hmm. And so the contracting officers, if they see that two or more contractors could do a particular work that they're going to be having, mm-hmm. they're low in their HubZone goals, yeah. they can set it aside. Right. Just to have some contractors. So mm-hmm. if I only have maybe 10 or 12 other firms that have my NAICS, mm-hmm. that's a lot less than having, you know, 1,000.
Right.
So it certainly reduces the competition mm-hmm. a lot.
Mm-hmm. Well, just the fact that you said there's 3% of the contracts and you're not meeting that goal, yeah. that means there's money left on the table.
Yes.
Now, that's one thing
yes.
that really gets me going.
Mm-hmm.
You never leave money on the table.
No.
And,
no.
you know, just like all other, you know, grant, you know, applications and things like that, it's, you know, you understand mm-hmm. that you have to give, you know, specific information. You have to be in compliance. You have
yes.
to meet federal regulations
yes.
like any other, mm-hmm. you know, funding that comes from the federal government.
Right.
And if you understand, you know, that particular way of doing business, mm-hmm. why leave this much money on the
exactly.
table when you know you need to build your community?
Exactly. So, and, you know, and this program is... It's a feel-good program.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I talk with acquisition officials and they finally understand that this is an economic development program because all of us have poor, very poor distressed areas in our communities. I
mm-hmm.
live in Maryland, in mm-hmm. Prince George's County. There are some areas there that are not that good. There are areas here in Washington, D.C. that are pretty bad.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all know these areas that we need employment for the young people there. We need employment for the old people there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we all have a vested interest in making sure that this program succeeds.
Right.
And so the federal officials, these contracting officials usually say, but Mariana, we cannot find enough contractors because obviously they need a larger pool sometimes,
mm-hmm,
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the opportunity to team up with other, for example, a HubZone firm mm-hmm. can joint venture with another HubZone firm and
right.
form a HubZone joint venture. A HubZone joint venture, obviously, they have strength in numbers. They can
mm-hmm.
tackle maybe a larger solicitation that they
right.
could not have done by themselves.
Right.
Also, as we look into the future, probably in a couple of years or so, the HubZone program is going to incorporate a mentor protege program
mm-hmm.
that was authorized by a particular statute, and we're working on that. And for those that are familiar how the mentor protege program operates
mm-hmm.
under the 8A,
right.
it's very similar.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's going to be a mentor protege program for all programs, all small business programs.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, the advantage of the HubZone mentor protege is that the level of competition is less.
Right.
So,
right.
again, I mean, those companies that are doing their homework right now, position themselves, doing exactly what you've been saying, you know, kind
mm-hmm.
of looking at, okay, what is my area? What am I going to do in terms of training my employees, getting tax breaks in my facility, refurbishing this or that, you know, what am I going to do on this?
Mm-hmm.
And then once they come in, if, you know, maintaining the certification, if they have all their proper audits in place themselves,
mm-hmm,
if they're
mm-hmm.
themselves really learning all this,
mm-hmm.
They're going to be in an excellent position when this mentor protege becomes implemented
right.
Because it's going to provide even more growth opportunity. You
mm-hmm,
know?
Mm-hmm. You know, I was just thinking for those that, you know, are feeling timid about attempting this, you know,
mm-hmm.
because of skills or whatever,
mm-hmm.
that they may want to consider tapping into, you know, their local college or nearby
Definitely.
College, getting some interns that can go out and do this research, put this whole thing together.
Yes,
so there
yes.
are options that are
yes.
out there.
And, you know, and the SBA has a lot of grantees around the country.
Mm-hmm.
They're also in the website under local assistance is the small business development centers, usually they're universities.
Right.
And they
right.
can at least start doing some of their initial kind of marketing analysis mm-hmm. by using free resources that their tax dollars are already paying for.
Right.
And then obviously our district offices are around the country. Procurement Technical Assistance Centers, the PTACs, mm-hmm. are excellent mm-hmm. outfits too mm-hmm. for them. Our office works very closely with all these three entities, and we provide train-the-trainer sessions too.
Mm-hmm.
So there are all these resources, Angela, that they can use that they don't have to spend their own time. They can actually leverage knowledge from these experts in the field too.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Mariana, I just want to say I am just so grateful that you have come on the program today, because this, like I said, when I saw this, I said I must get this out, because I personally, I like that feel good, that I've done something that can make mm-hmm. a difference. And I feel this information that you are providing today, it can make a difference in some very poor areas, mm-hmm. and it can change lives.
Yes.
That's what really mm-hmm. gets me excited.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about this program, and I'm going to be contacting you.
I would love to hear from you,
Angela.
To
talk to you more about
Definitely.
How I can get more information mm-hmm. out, you know, maybe assist in a webinar, something to
Definitely.
Help people get involved in this. So
Great.
I want to thank you for being on the show.
Thank you
we
for having me.
We could just talk for hours about
yes,
this,
we can.
And we'll have to do some more communicating about the hub
Definitely.
Zones and what's happening with the program.
Mm-hmm.
But I want to thank you for being on today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, absolutely. This was a wonderful program. And I want to just say to our listening audience, we're, you know, please check the website, you know, and go out and get information. And please join us next week as we talk about A133 audit. I know a lot of you nonprofits are preparing, so I'm going to walk you through how to be prepared for your A133 audit. So join us next week as we discuss this. And also, next Tuesday, I will be a guest on a program that's going to be aired with Kimberly Stewart, and that program will be next Tuesday, the 19th, at 3 p.m. Pacific time. So join that program, and while we discuss, you know, more business information, stepping stones to everyday success. So join us on Tuesday and again next Thursday. Thank you again for listening, and join us next week on A Sharp Outlook.
Thank you again for tuning into A Sharp Outlook. Please join your host, Angela Sharp, next Thursday at 10 a.m. Eastern Time, 7 a.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel. Tune in again next week.